a solar eclipse. The cosmic ballet goes on.
Does anyone want to switch seats?
Go, 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 go!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you, my friends, have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you choose. I'm Tom Merritt, and of course, with me as always, my co-host, Brian Pushbroom. Said it couldn't be done, that we could never have a major award-winning podcast hosted by a cleaning appliance, but today we have pushed right past those boundaries. Actually, Brian Brushwood, of course, off chasing the eclipse. So it's just me today with June Hollister, the baby. And, of course, her father, Sean Hollister, senior editor at CNET. How's it going, Sean?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Of course, Sean actually wrote a great article up for CNET about MoviePass. We've talked about MoviePass a bunch on Cord Killers. It's the idea that you pay a certain amount a month to get unlimited access to theater movies. So we're going to talk a little bit to Sean about why this works, why AMC's mad about it. And of course, we should mention Bryce Castillo, the producer, still here as well. Bryce, thank you for not chasing the eclipse today.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was fine.
It's fine. All right, let's move on to the primary target. MoviePass lowered its monthly subscription to $10 a month. That's less than the price of a movie in most locations in the United States. The service launched way back in 2011. Back then, it was around $30 a month. It varied by location at certain times in its life. It lets you see multiple movies in a month with a few restrictions. You can't see IMAX. You generally can't see 3D. You can't see the same movie twice. But otherwise, you can just show up, buy a ticket, go and see the theater, and watch a movie with your movie pass. Now, don't cry. Don't be like AMC Theaters. They've been upset about this and looking at their options, in fact, saying they're actively working to determine whether it may be feasible to opt out and not participate. But as Sean wrote in his CNET article, MoviePass CEO Mitch Lowe explained the system does not require any cooperation from AMC or others. The MoviePass, Sean, it sounds like, just works like a credit card.
That was the crazy thing I found out. And maybe this isn't news to people who have been using MoviePass for a long time now, because it's been around since 2011. But now that it's in the public consciousness, people were like, ooh, AMC is going to back out of the deal? What's going on? There's no deal. They just send people a MasterCard. MoviePass sends people what's actually a MasterCard credit card. And when you get near the theater, they've got kind of a GPS location-based a program where it'll enable the card to have a certain amount of money on it for a movie ticket when you get near the theater. You get near the theater, the credit card terminals that are at the theater have known IDs. They try to charge that card. And if you've activated it, they say, hey, there actually is money in your bank account, in your MasterCard account, to do this transaction. So they don't need AMC to work with them at all. And in fact, the weird thing about my interview was the tone of this CEO, Mitch Lowe. He was kind of really apologetic to AMC, to the movie studios, the theaters chains, because he didn't expect it was going to have such a big impact on their stock price. He didn't expect them to come out and say, oh my God, we're considering, we're going to see if we can legally get out of this. He thought they were going to be ecstatic about this arrangement to get more of their theater seats filled during the downtime, during the down season following the summer, what was actually kind of a crummy summer for the movie studios, the movie theaters, who had issues with earnings. And June also wants to weigh on in this, I could tell. She's talking to me a little bit right now.
She has a lot to say about that stock price. I can hear that.
But on the flip side, he was like, we're going to push this through either way. We're going to ram this through. If they decide they're not going to take MasterCard anymore, we'll switch to Visa, where they're going to tell their theater employees, don't take cards that have the MoviePass sticker on them. He'll just change their cards.
Yeah. So if people are a little bit confused, they send you a card, a credit card, And that works at pre-approved theaters. Now, MoviePass doesn't approve every theater. There are some theaters that are luxury, that have really high prices. But most of the theaters, more than 90% of the theaters in the U.S. are going to be approved to be used. And so they would have to stop taking MasterCards to stop taking that card. When Sean was talking about the you're near the theater, that's the app, because the app also has the card number in it. And the app can say, hey, you're near the theater now. We'll get you ready to be able to use the app to purchase using the online system. Again, just working like a credit card. But this $10 price point can't make anybody money. It's only going to lose MoviePass money, though, right? Because MoviePass pays the theater full price for every ticket you buy through their service.
That's the other reason why this isn't really a partnership, is because they're paying that full price through these MasterCards to the theater. It's just like if MoviePass was buying up a whole bunch of tickets and then selling them to you. It's kind of like that, except you're just purchasing them with their card instead of you buying a ticket through them. They're still kind of the middleman here. But if they're paying full price, right, how do they make any money? And what Mitch Lowe told me, what the CEO told me, was they're expecting that most people who buy this, kind of like most people who buy a gym membership, aren't necessarily going to be in the gym every day. They're not going to be in the theaters every single day doing this. He says some folks are going to get a great deal. They'll go to 20 movies a month. They'll get to, you know, get to tell all their friends. They'll be kind of the early adopters, the wave of enthusiasts who spreads the word about this because they're watching their 20 movies a month. But everybody else, he says they're targeting folks who currently watch only maybe 3 to 6 movies a year. And he's done the math. He's done these trial programs. He thinks that they're only going to end up watching 6 to 12 times a year. So they spend a maximum of 12 tickets. They're paying for a maximum of 12 tickets on this target group. And they hope that enough people will go few enough times that it kind of balances out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way subscription services often work, is we know a lot of people will get a good deal out of it, but more people who sign up because they think they'll get a good deal won't. And that's how we make the money. $10 is shaving that margin super thin. My guess is, and I'm sure he wouldn't want to say this to you, Sean, is that MoviePass isn't going to keep this amount for long, but they know they'll get a lot of attention. They'll get a lot of press. And so they want to put it out there and get as many people in the system as possible so that folks know about it and start telling their friends about it. And even if it goes up to $20 or $30 again later, folks will still look at it and say, well, wow, it's cool that my friend is able to just go to the theater whenever he wants. That said, my problem with this has always been that you can't do advanced purchasing. They are actually partners with about 6% of the theaters they work with, but the vast majority they aren't. And so you have to show up at the theater and buy your ticket then.
It's okay,
Jim. Yeah. It's kind of a thing where they're hoping that they make big partnerships with the theater companies eventually. They believe that Mitch Lowe, in case you're not aware, he was one of the founding executives at Netflix. He wasn't the first person at Netflix. He wasn't one of the two co-founders who originally created Netflix, but he was there when they ended up really ramping up their DVD business. And what he says is that, like Netflix, he expects that we'll be able to make partnerships with the studios so that they do some revenue sharing in the end. Right now, they're having to pay full price. Right now, they're having to do this. But he expects that by kind of giving the theaters a way to you, kind of the same way Netflix has like a back catalog of movies and TV shows, there's a lot of things that aren't, you know, top line things that you'd watch at Netflix, that you watch a lot of crummy movies at Netflix too, a lot of older movies, a lot of movies that aren't the hottest thing in town. He expects that theaters will say, wow, we can get seats filled for all of these indie films, all these smaller films that aren't doing amazing at the box office. Now we can get people watching those movies as well. That's what he believes.
And theoretically, theaters would like this because they make their money off the concessions. A lot of times their deal with studios doesn't allow them to see a cent off of ticket sales until maybe the third or fourth week in. And so they want to sell you concessions. If this brings people into the theater, they can sell them more concessions. But AMC is very upset. Before we move on, I'm curious why you and why Mitch thinks AMC is upset at this when they're certainly not going to lose money on the deal.
So what Mitch said, and I don't know if I have a personal opinion here because I don't follow the theater business very closely, but what Mitch said is that the theater industry kind of took a hit. They saw that sales had slowed considerably during the summer. They didn't meet their targets. The investment community was, you know, bearish on the stock. Apparently, the stock prices went down a tremendous amount before MoviePass hit. And then when MoviePass's news hit that it was going to be $10 a month and all these folks got so interested in it, their stock dipped again. And he doesn't understand why the stock dipped, but he thinks it was kind of a reactionary move by AMC. Oh, crap, we got to say something. We've got to do something. Our stock is going down again. We need to show that we're out ahead of this, is what Mitch
Lowe believes. And AMC is saying it puts downward pressure on ticket prices because people get used to paying $10 a month. If MoviePass goes under, they won't want to spend more than that because they'll be used to that.
I kind of buy that argument. I kind of buy that argument that, you know, at a certain point you get used to free. You get used to free two-day shipping on my Amazon Prime products. I'm very used to that. It would be very hard for me to go to three-day shipping or something like that, or a week, or waiting, you know, a week or two again for things to ship to me. But by the same token, it does seem like there are other pressures to, you know, pull down the price of a movie ticket. And movie tickets have gotten so expensive recently. I buy Mitch Lowe's argument that he can get people like myself, perhaps, who don't go to the movies very often because it's not so convenient. We can stream so many things in our home already. We got a nice big screen TV. There's such a hassle to get into the theater, to get to the theater, to get the tickets, to get the snacks that are super overpriced in addition to the overpriced movie tickets, that I feel like there are folks who just won't go to the movies at all who are going to start doing it as a result of this. And I would be one if it weren't for having to get her there. Because that's now, the big hurdle for me. Right
obviously, now. you've got a baby that's going to keep you from going to the movies as often. Yes. But this isn't going to solve that. But our next story coming up may help you out there. Before we move on, though, real quick, I want to mention that there are several listeners, both to this show and Daily Tech News Show, who reported problems with MoviePass signing up for the website. They've seemed to have stabilized that. They just got a lot more interest than maybe they were prepared for. Although a couple of guys on Twitter have been saying that they're still waiting. They got charged, but they're still waiting for more information about the card and stuff like that. So your mileage may vary, of course, but let's keep an eye on MoviePass because it is intriguing. On the one hand, making it easier to go to the theater, potentially, especially if they get these partnerships. And in a minute, making it easier not to go to the theater and another assault on the theaters. But real quickly, I want to thank everybody who supports us on Patreon, patreon.com/cordkillers. It's the only way we fund the show. We don't take advertising. We don't take movie studio money. We don't take anybody's money, but yours only if you want to. We have 1,703 people who are saying, you know what? I get enough value out of this show that I'm willing to kick like a dollar your way every month. And we super thank you for that. We've got a Spoiler in Time project underway. If we get, I think it's what now, 147 more patrons.
Yep.
We will take our old back catalog of Spoiler in Time shows where we talked about a bunch of different TV shows and movies, and we'll break them up by topic. So you can find just the show or the movie you want and hear what Brian and I had to say about it. But we need your help to get there. So please help us out, patreon.com/cordkillers. Now it's time for How to Watch. All right, so you got a baby on your lap. You can't get out to the theater. You can't go into a nice quiet movie, obviously, like that. Well, your only alternative now is to wait the 90-day window for that movie to come to some kind of situation where you can rent it or stream it in your home. Bloomberg reports its sources say Apple and Comcast are both in talks with movie studios like Warner Brothers and Comcast's own Universal on a project to make movies available for home viewing within as little as 17 days after release in theaters. Prices being discussed would be something like $50 per movie for 17 days, maybe a little cheaper, like $30 after 30 days. Theater owners, obviously, as you have guessed already, have objected to this plan. But they're so intransigent about discussing it that the studios are actually considering implementing it without their support. Now, they haven't done it. This is all based on sources. But they're getting serious about needing to make up that DVD revenue as the sales of discs go down. And we could be seeing a war here if theaters decide not to carry movies from studios who participated in this program. I don't know that the theaters want to carry out that threat and say, hey, the only way to see a Universal or Warner Brothers movie is to watch it at home. Up till now, that hasn't really worked. That hasn't really caused, you know, a stampede away from the theaters. It's been a slow trickle away from the theaters. But Sean, what do you think? Would you pay $50 to see a movie that's only a couple weeks old?
I mean, gosh, the baby situation makes me wonder, because before I had a baby, I would never buy any digital movies whatsoever. I would rent them. I would stream them, you know, through Netflix, a subscription plan I already had. But the idea of paying, you know, $15 to buy a digital copy of a movie that I'd probably only watch once, because I generally do watch movies only once, seemed like a big deal to me. Then all of a sudden, we can't go to the theaters anymore because of June. I start buying digital movies so I can see them a few weeks earlier than I normally would. So maybe I would pay a little bit more. I don't know if I'd pay $50, though. That's a lot. That's the price of a top-notch video game. That's the price of a nice meal out for the family. That's quite a bit of money to see a movie that soon. And I'm not sure how much traction I get out of seeing it just that little bit earlier.
Although 30 days and spending $30, which is another situation that was floated in this. Again, these aren't the plans. These are things being kicked around, apparently. Then it starts to come close for you and your wife to be about what you pay if you went to the theater.
Unless we're using MoviePass, in which case.
Unless you're using MoviePass, right? Which is another wrench in this situation, which could be to the theater's benefit. They might want to partner with MoviePass in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. I could see $30. Because that's what we pay anyway, you're right. And then we wouldn't have to travel there. I mean, the question is, if I'm paying more, am I getting enough more? If it's something where I can be part of the Twitter conversation right away, the social media conversation around these new things, and not have to worry about spoilers and not have to worry about all these things, it makes it more interesting if I'm like day one. But if it's, you said it's like a 30-day window? I don't know. That might be late enough that kind of initial wave has passed and it's already in the VOD territory.
Well, that's the weird thing, right? Is you're in the situation where you're not going to see it day one right now. But at 30 days, you're like, well, I can just wait a few more days and see it for a lot cheaper.
Exactly.
You know, even if it is a couple months before that. I think that's probably why they're having these talks, is to figure out what the estimated audience is. And the theater owners have taken a very hard line on all of this, even against MoviePass, as we talked about, saying, no, we don't want anything to change. Fact of the matter is, things are going to change. It's just a matter of how.
How powerful is it that people still reference, sorry, Jin dropped her bottle. How powerful is it that people still reference box office numbers as the measure of a film's success? And can we get away from that? Because I wonder if that is one of the linchpins keeping this all from happening. The early, let's, you know, be able to watch things the same time they come out in theaters.
Yeah, I mean, this year a lot of people have been talking about how those box office numbers are lower than they had been in the past, and we're definitely seeing a little bit of a trickle off. Maybe it's fatigue over superhero movies. Maybe it's not, but I guarantee you, this is not the system that we're going to have in 5 or 10 years. And there's lots of different things going on. Subscription theaters, Disney, if you read this Bloomberg article, is focusing on fewer but bigger event movies like Star Wars, where they know people will go out to the theater. And I could see kind of a hybrid approach where somebody like Universal says, okay, we'll have some big event movies that we won't ever give this shorter window to, but there may be some movies that we just decide to give a 1 week window to. And I think that's what the theaters are worried about, is if you give them 17 days, then eventually what's the problem in giving them a 10-day window or a 7-day window or a 3-day window?
Yeah, from the theater's perspective, I definitely see that. From the studio's perspective, what are they doing to make sure that if I'm screening a copy of my movie at home, I'm not screening it for 30 people instead of 2 people? If it's not, I mean, just my family, if I invite all my friends over, yeah, and we all watch Dunkirk, you know, is that an issue for the studios? Have they figured out a way around that?
I don't know. I always feel like that's an overblown scenario, because how many people really want to consistently host people at their house in those greater numbers? It's a hassle. And if it does happen regularly, the neighbors are going to notice, the police will get called in, and it is going to be against your terms of service to be able to do that. I really don't think that's going to have a big effect. It might be a few isolated incidents here and there. People had the same worry about DVDs. They said, oh, people stop going to the theaters and they'll just host big parties for DVDs or videotapes, as far back as that. And I don't think that happened. So my guess is that wouldn't be the problem. It's honestly a situation where the theater owners are really going to have to figure out how to make a better deal. Maybe they can get back some of that ticket revenue the first week or so of release by agreeing to this. And maybe the presentation in Bloomberg isn't putting enough light on the fact that the studios may be not willing to budge on that and yet trying to get this shorter window too.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder whether they're going to budge on price or on window first. And I would expect price first, given the downward pressure maybe from things like MoviePass and the fact that people are realizing, I think, it's even if MoviePass itself isn't lowering the price, it's kind of started the conversation around price again. That yeah. people are talking about, wait, well, how? Why are movies, you know, $14 a pop now in big cities for a movie ticket? It's starting that conversation around price. It means that there's this opportunity for the studios to be the good guy here and say, hey, here's this, you know, way we can do something really cool for you. And to maybe move their attention away from
the fact that availability. So yeah.
Not that they aren't the good guy all the time by giving us these movies to begin with.
Yeah, sure. It is interesting, too. We didn't talk about this as much, that Apple and Comcast are involved in this. So the idea would be your Apple TV would be one way to get whatever new movie service this is, but your Comcast Xfinity box would be the other. And Comcast really starting to take seriously this idea of home viewing and cord cutting. And this is another example of that, especially because they also own one of the studios. So it's one arm talking to the other.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like real estate, it's all about location, location, location.
Under Surveillance.
Not a ton of things out this week, not like last week, but Netflix released a trailer for The Punisher. Interestingly, released it as a post-roll to the final episode of The Defenders. So if you kept the credits going, or if you're still watching, if you keep the credits going at the end of episode 8, you'll get that Punisher trailer. They did not release it on YouTube. Or anywhere else for that matter. And so a bunch of people went and ripped it from their Netflix streams and put it up on YouTube, which I have to say, as someone who has a wife who works for the company that runs movie clips, this caused some consternation out there amongst people who are normally the first to put a new trailer up. Punisher set to release sometime this year. We didn't get an actual release date for it. Sean, I don't know how closely you're following The Defenders. If you're making your way through it, how do you feel about The Punisher?
I just started The Defenders, and honestly, it's a little weird not having watched Iron Fist. I've seen Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Luke Cage, but I hadn't seen Iron Fist. What I've seen of Punisher so far, I'm not a tremendous fan. I've liked some of earlier incarnations of The Punisher, but I feel like maybe now's not the right time to have somebody, you know, mowing down criminals with impunity in the streets. So I don't know. It's not grabbing me quite the way I thought it would. Mm-hmm. But I am a fan of the superhero series generally. So
I'm looking forward to this. I thought his portrayal of the Punisher in Daredevil was fantastic.
I can't argue with that. Maybe just recent events have phased me a little bit.
The first trailer is out for the series Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, the 10-episode anthology, kind of like a Black Mirror. It's based on short stories from Philip K. Dick, the author. He's the guy who wrote the stories that gave you Blade Runner, Total Recall, etc. It stars, among many others, Benedict Wong, Steve Buscemi, Anna Paquin, Terrence Howard, Bryan Cranston, who's also an executive producer on the series. It's coming to Channel 4 in the UK. They're the place that gave you Black Mirror in the first place before it went to Netflix. And it's coming to Stan in Australia. And then on Amazon elsewhere. So here in the U.S., that's where we'll get it. No release date on that one yet, though. I don't know if you got a chance to see the trailer, Sean.
I haven't yet, but that is a long list of fantastic names you just uttered. So, yeah, I'm absolutely going to watch that then.
It's a crazy good cast. I know for a fact from watching this trailer and from being a Philip K. Dick fan that the daddy thing seems to be one of these episodes. If anybody's read that short story, it's a great horror story, not even sci-fi. And my sister made me read it. It was the first Philip K. Dick story I ever read. My sister made me read it when I was like 9. It scared the crap out of me.
Whoops. I think June is trying to turn off Skype. She's handing on the keyboard.
She's like, no, too scary. I do not want to hear about the daddy thing. This is my real daddy. He will not be replaced. His skin will not be pulled off. I promise you. It's going to be fine. Finally, Galaxy Quest was set for a revival on Amazon. We learned about this back in 2015, but it was put on hold after the death of Alan Rickman. Deadline reports it's back on with Paul Scheer set to write the scripts. A Galaxy Quest fan or no, Sean?
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan. by Grab Thor's Hammer, and can't wait to have more of that.
Yeah, I imagine they'll have to do some sort of tribute to Alan Rickman and his character from Galaxy Quest to make this happen. Paul Scheer, he's written for Veep, the disaster artist. He's a comedian. So it looks like they found somebody who's excited about it, who's funny, and tweeted by Grab Thar's Hammer, "I will write thee." And so he's already in universe. All right, let's talk a little bit about what we're watching. And Sean, I won't spoil Game of Thrones because I know you haven't seen Sundays yet.
Thank you.
And you mentioned you're watching The Defenders. Anything mm-hmm. else that you've been watching?
I finally finished Sense8 because I wanted to find out how it ended. And then I discovered that by watching Sense8, you can't figure out how it ended. They ended it very, very abruptly when Netflix canceled the show. So now I'm waiting for the finale that they said they would do for Sense8 after they got all of the angry and apologetic or pleading fans, to bring Sense8 back. It was, in my opinion, a phenomenal show. But to see it kind of come to
well, now
a
you understand
end without
the frustration that people had when they announced they were bringing a season three because they didn't finish it, and the brilliance of Netflix saying, you know what, cost us more not to let them finish the story than to.
Yeah. It's I'm glad to hear that they're going to get that closure, because not only was it. It struck me, watching that last episode of Sense8 that we did get, it struck me that not only did it not have closure, but it seemed like the producers were kind of defying Netflix to cancel it, the way that they tried to accelerate it in that very last episode. They tried to accelerate all the plot threads. They kind of jump over and make a few leaps of logic, a few places in the story where they kind of snip and trim things together, so they kind of... It makes me even more angry that it didn't finish, because they were trying to speed it up so much. You didn't leave them in any kind of place whatsoever that you could be happy with that conclusion. And so I wonder if they were kind of taunting Netflix, kind of playing chicken with them to see if they would cancel it or not.
Now, I know you haven't made your way all the way through Defenders yet, but I saw the first four episodes early. And so this weekend, on Friday, we watched the last four episodes. There's only eight episodes in the season. And I have to say, I don't know if it was because I finished those first four episodes earlier and had to wait, but, and I hate to say this because I don't want to prejudice you, I got a little bored in some of the last four episodes. I still overall liked the series, and I liked the way they integrated the characters, but the menace did not sit with me. It did not scare me, and I felt like it was fairly predictable towards the end.
I have to say, I was worried about that from the first episode. Honestly, it's very, very slow paced. There's a little, a little bit of plot movement in there, but most of it's kind of set up. Let's see what happened to everybody in the other series: Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. Where do they go after the last time we saw them? A lot of setup in that first episode. But it made me wonder if this show is going to be more about let's put the characters together in interesting ways than actually about telling a new, original, interesting story around all four of them.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm guessing maybe it didn't play out.
Yeah. All right. Let's check up. What else I've been watching is Firefly, Twin Peaks, Game of Thrones, and Preacher, as usual. Now, this week on Spoiler in Time with Brian out, we won't be talking about Preacher and Firefly. We'll save our Firefly discussion until next week, and we'll talk about two episodes of Preacher next week. But Bryce is going to sit in and talk with us about Game of Thrones and Rick and Morty, which I always also watched. And speaking of Bryce, what are we on the lookout for?
Hey, we got an We got an email from Andy, who sent in a spooky recommendation. He writes, "Hi guys, have you seen Channel Zero on the Sci-Fi Network? It's an anthology horror show similar to American Horror Story, where each season will tell a new story. The first season is called Candle Cove, based off of the creepypasta of the same name, written by a cartoonist and friend of the show, Chris Straub. You can catch all six episodes with limited commercials on their website. It may show up on other services around the time season two hits in October, as a lot of their other shows are on Netflix." Thank you, Andy. Yeah, I watched the first episode of this, and I was, is it mean to say that I was surprised that it had a really good amount of production value.
There is a prejudice with sci-fi. People forget about Battlestar Galactica or even Haven, and they think about Sharknado a lot of times.
Right. It's a pretty good premise of like a haunted channel that kids watch, and then they disappear or worse. I watched the first episode today, and I think I'm actually going to check out the rest of the season. It's only six hour long episodes. The only bummer is that it's not streaming yet. But like Andy says, it'll probably come to streaming services soon because season two is premiering in September. But if you have a cable authentication, you can watch it on the Sci-Fi website with quote limited commercials. I don't know how limited those are though.
Yeah. And Sci-Fi is available on Sling TV, PlayStation View, places like that. So if you've got those services, you can probably find it there as well on demand or even get it in the Sci-Fi app. I think Sling TV is how I get into the Sci-Fi app myself.
Oh, yeah? Great.
Yeah. So check that out as well. If you got something we should be on the lookout for, be sure to email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Real quickly, before we carry on here, a reminder that Brian and I do have a bunch of other projects that we like to tell you about every week. Brian has the Scam Stuff store, has the Modern Rogue, and I've got my book Pilot X. And I just started a new podcast with Rob Reed called After On at after-on.com. After On is Rob's book. And it's about a super AI and what the impact of that is on our lives when a super AI finally arrives. And it's frightening, but also entertaining. And everything he talks about in the book is based on something real. So the podcast is 8 episodes of Rob talking to experts about the reality behind the concept he used in the book. And then Rob and I talk about how that fits into the story itself. We talk about synthetic biology. We talk about terrorism. We talk about AI, of course. We talk about astronomy and Fermi's paradox and aliens. It's all in there. So if these topics sound interesting, first of all, pick up the book and then definitely subscribe to the podcast at after-on.com. Let's move on to the front lines. Ted Sarandos told Variety that Netflix plans to spend $7 billion on content in 2018, up from the $6 billion it has planned to spend this year. And get this, Sean, most of that's going to be on licensed content, not originals. People think, oh, Disney's leaving. Netflix is going to have nothing but originals. Most of their content still is not original content. In fact, Sarandos said, we're a couple of years from seeing it even go 50-50.
Huh. I wonder if there's another big license deal in particular, or do you think they're going to spread that around piecemeal?
Yeah, well, they have way more licensing deals than I think we think about, right? Because we see Disney, and maybe we see CBS in there because you see Star Trek and MacGyver and stuff like that. But there are all kinds of other content holders out there for various television shows, and even big companies, you know, big studios will license part of their catalog at a time, even if they don't license all of it.
Gotcha. And yet, no more Sense8 except for that finale.
Well, but it'll always be there.
Like Firefly.
Yeah. TechCrunch, Cordcutters News, and Torrent Freak all report that people are seeing warnings when users had a private channel on Roku, indicating that Roku has cleaned up its act with private channels. Roku was banned in Mexico after failing to police the private channels that infringe copyright. Now, a private channel doesn't have to infringe copyright. What it's supposed to be used for, and often is used for, is a developer giving a few beta testers access so they can make sure there aren't any bugs. But nefarious people will sometimes use it as a way to distribute a channel without having it go to the Roku app store approval process. So the new warnings advise that all channels may be removed without notice, and implies that Roku's going to start paying more attention to these private channels, Sean.
Let me get this straight. Roku had its own dark web, basically?
Kind of. I mean, it's no different than what Android and iOS have, but people were using it to distribute questionable apps.
Fair enough.
So hopefully this will get them back on sale in Mexico. Nielsen announced it will begin crediting publishers with ratings of video content on Facebook, Hulu, and YouTube as part of its digital content ratings. Without getting a degree in Nielsen, it's hard to tell what's going on here. This is separate from live TV. Hulu and YouTube are actually counted in your traditional TV ratings. That's what most people think of as Nielsen. This is different. This is digital content ratings. So clips. Think of it as YouTube TV and Hulu TV, where you watch live channels counted in the traditional ratings. And then the clips of YouTube, the clips of Facebook, even the clips on Hulu, those now count in the digital content ratings. But it's a way of getting mutually agreeable ratings for people to say, we can present to advertisers and validate advertisers' buys. Also, Nielsen launching Nielsen Esports to create reports focusing on sponsorship valuations, investment strategy, and audience measurement for esports. So again, esports can go out and say, we are actually bigger than or close to as big or less than a traditional sport like the NBA, and have people believe the numbers.
Yeah. It's big to see Nielsen getting it on there, if nothing else, because of the giant brand that people know Nielsen as the ratings organization. Yeah. But I'm also curious, to what degree those clips, what are they counting towards? Are they counting towards like an overall impact of a show? You know, Game of Thrones had this much interest in a particular episode, but also this much, and you know, it's clips that it was shared on the social media. Or are they kind of fudging these numbers a little bit so that they're kind of rolling them into a broader number just to.
Yeah. If Derek's listening, Derek, go ahead and email us and let us know. I should have emailed you about this story already. Cause my impression is the digital content ratings can provide a little filling in the gaps for things. Cause in the past, a lot of times way back in the back days, companies wouldn't want to put their full shows online because they didn't get credit for them. This fills in that gap. But it also allows you to go to an advertiser and say, hey, we want you to buy our YouTube channel. We want you to do advertising placement with our Hulu presence and have some numbers to back that up.
Yeah, third-party numbers that not an internal, so you can be sure that they've been verified, validated by a third party, and just put your money into it. That makes sense.
Yeah, it was what the web was supposed to get rid of, but everybody still wants it because nobody can agree on the best way to count the web numbers, so you need somebody independent to do that. YouTube TV added 14 new markets, making it available to 50% of U.S. households. That's available. It doesn't mean 50% of U.S. households subscribe to YouTube TV. And this is YouTube's streaming TV service that has like CBS, ABC, NBC. In fact, their big deal is that they always have the majority, if not all, of the broadcast networks. 17 more metro areas are planned to be added soon. And that would include Austin, Texas. So finally, Brian can try this out. I'll be honest. I tried out YouTube TV when it first launched. I thought it had a lovely interface on the phone, but I don't use it very often because its DVR isn't really a DVR. A lot of times when you're DVRing something, you're just getting the on-demand version, which has commercials that you can't fast forward through.
Was there a TV app for the YouTube TV app when you tested it? Is it part of, just the normal
separate.
YouTube app? It's a separate
app.
No,
it's its own television app called YouTube TV, which also is slightly confusing because now I have a separate YouTube thing that I have to launch.
I don't know why they keep breaking YouTube out into all of these different apps between kids and music and...
And music I'll buy because if I just want the kids stuff, that makes sure I get it. Music,
get
same
kids.
Way. But this should be in the actual YouTube app as an option. Like I would like to watch some live TV right now. And then if I'm not subscribed, it prompts me to subscribe, but no, it's its own thing.
It's pretty crazy. Cause they put YouTube clips in that app though.
Yes, they do.
Which just, oh man, that's
like, I don't want it after the fact. I want to get it like in the moment. If I'm browsing YouTube, I want something to pop up. Hey, there's this wonderful thing that's going on right now.
Your
show
is on
YouTube
TV.
Your show is on. I feel like they've never really figured that out, you know, how to get people who are primarily using mobile devices to, you know, on their daily lives, walking around places, to get them to be there at the right time to watch the shows that appear at a certain time.
Well, the YouTube TV app will do all the things you're talking about. It's just a separate app.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got it. Yeah. Separate app. Fun.
But I mean, I think your point still stands, which is I have to know to go subscribe and pay and download that app rather than having the YouTube app that I'm already using kind of nudge me to do that.
That's fair.
Yeah. Turner is going to launch a streaming service for UEFA Champions League and Europa League Soccer starting in 2018. No price was announced. Select live matches will still be broadcast on television, including on TBS, TNT, and True TV. But it looks like, if I'm reading this right, you'll be able to get a blackout-free stream of Champions League and Europa League. Go soccer. Finally, Sling TV is now available in Google Chrome for Windows and Mac as a beta for all users. The Grid TV Guide and the DVR access not available on launch for the web version, but Sling says they will arrive at some point. Subscribers can access it by just visiting sling.com and logging in. You'll get it right there. You don't have to launch another app. This is another one of those things we were talking about, Sean, where there's a certain style of person. Brian is one of these people who just watch on their desktop. And Sling TV's had a desktop app since launch, but sometimes it's just easier if it's already in the app you got running.
It also makes it a lot easier to take it with you places. You can just plug your computer into somebody else's HDTV or projector and just have it there in the browser instead of having to figure out, oh, we've got to install the app on your local device or whatever it is to make that work. I suppose you could carry around, you know, an Android TV or a Chromecast or some other device with you and do the same thing. But this just lets you do it without whatever computer happens to be nearby.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're not catching what Sean's saying, you can go to your friend's house, log in on their browser and watch your Sling TV. Just don't forget to log out or do, depending on whether you've got the multiple stream package or not, I guess. But yeah, it just makes things a lot more convenient. It is only in Chrome, though. It's not standards compliant, apparently. Takes advantage of something in Chrome to make it work. All right, let's move on to the dispatches from the front. Our boss Chris wrote in and said, hey guys, can you point me to a site that maintains an updated and detailed comparison of the various cord cutting services, PlayStation View, Hulu Live TV, Sling, etc. I'd like to see not only pricing and channel listings, but also details on DVR capabilities and limitations, as well as options to authenticate with other apps and services. As an Optimum subscriber, I'm able to authenticate with just about everything right now, which gives me flexibility to use a range of apps. No! There isn't anything that I know of like that, Chris. Cordcuttingreport.com has a really good cord cutting guide. And there are a bunch of cord cutting guides out there that are comprehensive, but they don't do what you're talking about, which is that one grid that says, here are all the services, here are all their channels, here's all the apps they authenticate with, here's how much it costs. It may exist out there. So if somebody knows of something that does everything Chris is talking about, and we know there's some things that are close, but something that does everything, DVR capabilities, channel listings, all of that, let us know, because that would be an incredibly valuable resource for everybody in the audience. Cordkillers@gmail.com.
That's right. We got another email from, I forgot to get their name, who writes, hi guys, thanks for all you do. I cut the cord over a year ago when I moved across the country and had to choose a new internet provider. It's the best decision I ever made, and I used your book to help me determine what services were right for me, so thank you. I am extremely interested in watching the Mayweather-McGregor fight on the 26th, but I am unsure of how to accomplish this. I have 3 Rokus, 2 Roku Premier Pluses, and a Roku Ultra. I also subscribe to PlayStation View and HBO through Amazon Prime. I want to have a party to watch the fight, but I don't know how to get pay-per-view with my setup. Can I subscribe to Showtime through Amazon and get the fight? Is there a pay-per-view app? Any help you could provide would be excellent. Thank you. It sounds like you can just subscribe to Showtime via the Amazon app. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, we'll have a link in the show notes to the page. But yes, you can go to Showtime and subscribe to Showtime anytime on its own. I know you can do that through Amazon, but that is kind of neither here nor there. If you want to stream the fight, you can purchase it to stream in your browser at showtimeppv.com. You could purchase and stream it on PlayStation consoles, or you can watch the fight with Sling TV. Or like I said, just purchase and stream the show on the Showtime pay-per-view app on Apple TV, iPad, or iPhone. From what I can tell, you don't need to subscribe to Showtime anytime. And in fact, it's looking like this is actually a separate app from that. So you'll want to get those apps. It's the Showtime PPV app. That's on Apple TV, iPad, or iPhone, but it looks like Sling TV has it, and that might work on Roku, which it looks like that's your platform is Roku. So go check that out at show.com, sho.com, And I'll have that link in the show notes as well. Finally, our last email here comes from another person who said, the recent moves by Netflix have made me think more about the future of networks. I'm wondering if in the future we don't have networks. We just have content companies. I've been thinking along these lines too. Universal, aka Comcast, owns NBC, USA, the movie studio, bunch of other things. So they're a massive content company. Fox is solid with an empire behind them, including studios and TV properties like FX. But neither of them currently have a top-tier distribution service. As cord-cutting becomes more mainstream, do they start to seriously look at having their own? And CBS? What if Netflix buys CBS and maybe some of the smaller networks like AMC? I love this part of your email because we always hear about people buying Netflix. Oh, Apple's going to buy Netflix. Amazon's going to buy Netflix. What if Netflix, which is what I think is going to happen, starts buying other things? What if they buy a network? And don't forget about Amazon. In the future, I see these big players consolidating and focusing more on becoming the producers and distributors, each having their own services that charge you $10 a month. For Netflix, get you all their stuff. $10 for Disney, get you Pixar movies in the Disney Channel, ESPN, etc. $10 to Universal, get you all the Fast and Furious movies, USA TV shows, Mr. Robot, all that. All that seems obvious, but here's the wrinkle. What happens to the commercials? Netflix has shown they don't need them. Do the others follow that model, or do they charge us $10 and still include commercials? Well, I'd like to hear what Sean has to think of this, but thank you, Adam, for these thoughts. I think commercials, they'll be experimenting with tiers like Hulu has and like CBS All Access has, where a cheaper price gets you the shows with commercials and you pay a little extra and you can have a service that doesn't have the commercials. I think Netflix is unusual, but it's in the premium class like HBO, Showtime, et cetera, who've never had commercials either. Sean, what do you think about this, especially Adam's thought about Netflix buying a content network?
Yeah, I mean, technically I work for CBS working at CNET, so I'm not sure about Netflix buying that particular company, how well that would work out, because we have
let's say
all
AMC
kinds
then,
of
to make it easier
but,
for you.
So what I really think about this is I wonder how many subscription services the market can bear. How many, you know, $10 a month can you be expected to pay before you say, wow, I can't afford another one. I don't want to have all these subscription services, and I do want to watch everything. And then you start getting people asking folks to maybe bundle these channels together, and then you get back to cable again. We got cable bundles all over again, except now they're internet services instead of cable bundles. They're not actually necessarily traveling through cable. They might be coming down over satellite. They might be coming in through fiber optic. But it's still basically cable all over again if, you know, people can't do these subscriptions, because at some point they need to team up and put that content together into a single stream that people can pay for. Unless we're willing to, you know, pay a la carte for each and every one of these things that we want. I don't see it working out for everybody, because at a certain point, if your content isn't as good as, you know, Netflix or Hulu or HBO, then people say, well, I've already got those ones. I don't want to pay for one more. And so I actually wonder if my own employer's CBS All Access, I wonder how well that's going to work out in this market yet. The idea of them buying an AMC or something like that, I could see them doing it for a smaller company that focuses on content, just to add a lot more content to their stable, to add a lot more production to their stable. I don't know if what Netflix would want to, because what they do best is not necessarily that, and they would have to figure out how to, you know, take all of their processes across a company like that in order to get that all into streaming. But I suppose at its heart, it is just really more content for people to watch, you know, an hour at a time. I guess it could happen. I just wonder what the end.
When I look at their acquisition of Millerworld, I see the beginnings of a template, which is they're going to buy small, affordable content companies that bring something else. In this case, it's merchandise and books. But if it's, you know, maybe they don't buy AMC, maybe they buy Skybound. Skybound is the company that makes The Walking Dead for AMC and is now going to be making shows for other people. And I think that's where Netflix goes next. It's not straight to the network level, because like you say, that's operating at a whole level that Netflix isn't familiar with. But buying content companies that also are able to make ancillary businesses and are a little smaller. I think we absolutely,
like you say, a template makes a lot of sense. If they get this model where they realize they can generate more content to their standards for their audience using these teams of people that they acquire, using these resources they acquire, what I don't necessarily see is them going after intellectual property. I don't think Netflix is going to say, we want to own this license for this particular, you know, Star Wars, if Disney hadn't already purchased that. I don't see them going after particular, you know, intellectual properties, because they can license with those folks in the short term to get a binge watchable burst of Marvel, something like that. And there's going to be and if there's a fatigue around that intellectual property, they don't necessarily want to hold on to that brand because they need to cycle their content. Netflix needs to cycle the things on their service to keep people watching, to keep people streaming and paying that subscription fee.
Although, as long as it's always there, if I'm the guy who's like, oh, I never watched Fuller House, I'm finally going to subscribe to Netflix. Netflix doesn't care if you're in the minority, as long as they have enough of those things, because they don't have a limited schedule. They can put as many of those bets out there as they want. So
I see that, but they don't need to buy the companies to get there, I feel like, because where else are you going to put Fuller House? You're going to put it on a back catalog service like Netflix, not Fuller House, but the original Full House. You've got to put that on a back catalog service. You want to be
although Netflix just centric. Lost Full House, even though they have Fuller House, which is hilarious.
Maybe I'm totally wrong.
I don't think anybody knows, right? And it's funny when I hear people like, how many of these services can we handle before we go back to bundling? Bundling isn't where the markets normally go. Bundling is just us saying, oh, I want the comfortable womb of cable television that just gave me everything and I didn't have to think about it. Usually what happens if you have too many things in a market is a bunch of them go out of business until you have the right number of things in a market. And I think that's probably what we'll see, because people are tired of paying $90 to $100 for stuff they don't want. And what these multiple services give you is control. Right now, there are too many of them because we don't know who the winners are outside of Netflix and Amazon and probably Hulu. We don't know how many the market can bear and what the makeup of them should be. But in the future, you're going to have a la carte, the exact thing that everybody said they wanted. You can decide which ones of these you want to buy. And I think that's where it's headed.
How can you have a la carte if you've got too many subscription services, though?
You don't have too many subscription services because people won't subscribe to them. And they fail. Okay, so, and then those shows go somewhere else.
Exactly. But where do they go? They become part of a bundle, right? Don't they become
part of Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or whoever, you know, NBC's new thing. They go to the survivors, not because you don't need to have a bundle. And in fact, I don't think Netflix wants to be bundled.
Isn't Netflix itself effectively a bundle of these things once it's at?
I mean, you could argue that it's a super channel, right? But it's just an entirely new, it's an entirely new model. And trying to compare it to the old model of cable gives you three tiers, I think is that way lies peril.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
But like you said, who knows what we're going to see. Hey, Sean, it was great talking with you today, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to follow Sean Hollister and get more of what Sean Hollister has to say, probably not referring himself in the third person, where should people go?
Sean Hollister's work can be found at cnet.com.
And you have a Twitter account too?
I do. It's Starfire2258. As a matter of fact, you can go cnet.com/profiles/Sean Hollister to get directly to a feed of everything I do.
Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Big thanks to my co-host, Brian Pushbroom, for being here to fill in for Brian Brushwood today. Not the same. I miss Brian, but, you know, for Broom, you are a pretty good co-host. We'll see you next time.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Court Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/courtkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount, but
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you could gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go
with you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.